name is Barry Allen. I am the fastest man alive.
RandomChatter.com presents a Flash podcast.
You see that red blur?
Dedicated to the discussion of the Flash television series.
A lot to discuss.
Scarlet Velocity.
Run, Barry, run!
Thanks for slowing down for a moment to listen to Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast. I'm your host, Josh.
And I'm Kyle Nimbus. Hey, Josh, you know, I'm sorry I couldn't reach out to you earlier this week. I missed your call. I've sort of been in a fog, you know, since our last podcast.
Okay, well, I hope you're getting yourself back together.
Yeah. I will do what I can do.
Well, it's great to hear you again this week. I'm glad you've floated in to join us. And you, as listeners, have discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show, The Flash, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. So, my friend Kyle, also known as Jay, is going to tell you about the episode that we're going to cover this week.
Well, actually, we're going to do something a little bit different here. We're going to do a game show this week. So that's right. Welcome to $20,000 Pyramid. All right. I'm going to give you some clues, all right? And you're going to try to guess the phrase. Are you ready?
Okay. I'm a little nervous. I'm ready. Okay. I'm ready.
All right. All right. The police.
Things Sting never acknowledges.
No. No. A black bear.
A black bear. Things that like to get into my trash can.
A tornado.
Tornado. Things in movies with sharks and Helen Hunt.
The Flash.
Oh, things you can't outrun.
Ding, 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 ding. That's right. The episode today is Season 1, Episode 3, Things You Can't Outrun. So thanks for playing along.
What do that I win?
That was fun. So this show, or this episode, originally aired on October 21st of 2014, written by Allison Shapker. And, oh my gosh, Grianne Godfrey. When I first read it, I thought it said Granny Godfrey or something like that, which sounds like a DC villain from the New Gods.
It does.
Directed by Jesse Warren, and the episode was about this. So there are just some things in life that you cannot run away from, even if you're the fastest man alive. Fear, regret, sadness, political ads in October, and Barry is finding out that even if he can be a hero sometimes, he's going to have to face failure every once in a while. A newly discovered metahuman called the Mist, and by the way, I never met a human I didn't like, will force him to look inward at those more serious issues. But in the meantime, all our other friends will have to try to make meta lemonade out of life's particle accelerated lemons. Iris and Eddie, they better face Joe soon. Caitlin will gather strength to let go of her late fiancé, Ronnie. Cisco will let go of his guilt. And Dr. Wells, he's doing okay right about now. But anyway, Barry will be there for all of them as the axis to their emotional wheel.
That's just the kind of good guy he is.
Yeah. Everything revolves around him.
It does. It does. Very, very fast. This was a very interesting episode. I'm looking forward to talking about some of the smaller topics. But first, we have a piece of news I want to share, and this is really exciting. I was stoked to hear this. But
exactly,
the Flash has been not renewed because it was already in for partial season, but it's got an order for a full 22 episode season.
Yippee!
Yes, I'm very excited about this.
Yeah,
my family's
back
very excited
nine.
About this.
Yeah, so it's not going to be 23 episodes like Arrow gets, but 22 is pretty much the standard for a season, I think. That's nothing to sneeze at there. And obviously, to get that order after, I think that we heard about this before the third episode aired, so to get that after two episodes, that's pretty good.
That is, it's impressive, and I think they're really liking what they see on the shows, because you can tell that the quality is there for sure, but I think they're also liking what they hear, because I hear so much good buzz on the internet, and it seems like that does drive a lot of decisions in TV these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the ratings are seeming to be consistently high, whereas some of the other comic book shows, even Arrow, now and again, you know, it's like they're up 1 week, they're down another, then they go down further, come back up a little bit. So I know S.H.I.E.L.D.'s kind of all over the place with their ratings, depending on what else is going on. But so far, I mean, you know, three episodes out, The Flash has only had a very, very small drop-off. So people are coming back week after week, which is great.
Yeah, I think the hype has really helped this show. But, you know, I mean, you can't all the hype in the world is not going to help if you don't have the quality that they're having. So
right, if you don't deliver it, yeah.
Yeah, you got to deliver. So, that's very exciting. I'm glad to hear that we got ourselves a full season. I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised a bit after even watching just the first episode, but it's always good to kind of get confirmed.
Yep, exactly.
All right, well, let's get going here because there's a lot of really interesting things to talk about this episode. I felt like it was a little bit different than the first two. Things You Can't Outrun is the title, and like the writers on both Arrow and seemingly Flash like to do, it has multiple meanings just embedded in that title. So let's kind of break it down a little bit by character. Now, okay. Barry starts us off with the introduction, as always. But did you notice that the introduction was different again?
Yeah, it's he seems to be doing it as a kind of an intro to the theme of the week, which is okay. Whereas, you know, we've talked about how the intro on this is kind of supposed to mirror the intro on Arrow, I think, in some fashion. And then even... what was it, last week, Barry kind of said, hey, this is where I'm supposed to do that intro thing, and, you know, he kind of made fun of it. It changes, and I'm happy for it to change each week. If that's, if it's Barry addressing us as, you know, the audience or as just his confidant, that, you know, he's telling us, you know, hey, you know, there's some things in life that you just cannot run, and here's, you know, what's in store for you and for the episode, sort of, you know, without, you know, telling you straight out. It fits into the whole theme of the episode, and I'm liking the way they're doing it so far.
I am too. Now, I did notice in this one, it almost seemed like the first part of his intro could be a standard introduction for the show. And then after that, he kind of went into that. And I don't know. We'll have to just see a few more episodes in. But I really do like, and again, this is from me being such a Flash fan through the 90s and beyond, you know, we didn't put this in as a reference later on in the show, but it really mirrors the comic books, the Flash comic books, because I think even now, even in the New 52, he starts the comic books off like that. Wally West used to start it off almost every issue. You know, my name is Wally West. I'm the fastest man alive, and that's kind of how that's what we've seen so far with this in the TV show. So,
yeah,
I think it's another nod to the comic book the way they're doing it.
I'll have to look at that. Wally West was not necessarily my favorite, though. He was the Flash when I first started reading. Well, I started reading the Flash right when the original run ended with the trial of the Flash, some of Carmine Infantino's original work. And then I was reading the Wally West stuff in the late 80s, early 90s. But I always preferred Barry. But yeah, I'd have to go back and look at that. But you're right.
Yeah.
With the new books, there is sort of that you know, monologue or intro.
It's that narration.
Narration.
That's what I'm looking for. It's this comic book is like it's told from his point of view, from the Flash's point of view. So I like that. Now let's kind of talk about these characters, about things they cannot outrun. Barry lays out a few things at the beginning. He says, you know, every one of us is running from something or to something, and some things you just can't outrun. I'm seeing Barry as, in this episode particularly, he's feeling like he didn't succeed sometimes. You know, he didn't save the judge. He can't save his dad with his powers. You know, he can't just go in and rush him out of there.
He knows he can, like, physically do it, but from a from a moral standpoint, he knows he can't do it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, from more from like a legal standpoint, because it wouldn't really give him the freedom that he wants his dad to have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think he's running away from failure and from, you know, I don't know what the word would be for to describe this, but he's running from lacking the ability to achieve what he really wants to achieve. And he's got to have some patience. And you know what? When you're the fastest man alive, yeah, patience is really not something.
Everything
you probably
goes
have
so
a lot of.
Slow. That's got to be frustrating for him. I mean, because I think he sees the thing that he's been living his, you know, pretty much his whole life, you know, looking for, or at least, what is it, the last 14 years, I think we saw, or they mentioned that it had been 14 years that his dad had been in prison.
I think that's right, yeah.
So, you know, I think he was 11, so he's like 25 now. So, you know, that's a long time to wait to try to, you know, feel like to finally get justice for your dad is something that he's able to do now. But he can't, like you said, he can't do that. And so he's that's probably very frustrating for him, especially, like you say, when he's the fastest man alive. So.
Right. And we'll continue to get into this, but I think this early on in the series, it's kind of a great way to look at the Flash's powers compared to the character development. I use that a lot, the word character development, but you know, in the first season, that's what you do. Because it's kind of ironic, you know, that he's so fast and there's just some things that his speed can't help. And I hear that sometimes, especially this summer, you know, as people were waiting for it to finally premiere, the Flash, you know, what kind of a villain, why'd they choose the Flash as the villain, or as not the villain, as the hero for this show?
Well, right.
Speed power. So he can run fast. What's the big deal? But there's a lot of really cool things you can do with running fast. And it's not what you would automatically think of, compared to all these other superheroes with super strength and invulnerability and, well, you know,
I think every hero, the goal with doing any of these superhero shows, whether if you're doing a show about Batman, about a man who is, you know, suffering such tragic emotional loss of his parents that he turns to crime fighting by dressing up as a giant bat and going out at night, to you know, a guy running around that shoots arrows at people, or you know, a man that is the last survivor of his planet who comes to Earth and, you know, brings hope on the S on his chest. No, it's just an S. It doesn't mean hope. But, you know, the goal, I think, for writers with all of these kinds of characters is to show us the human condition in some way. And there are just certain things you can address better with certain characters. And I feel... Or I think what the Flash does for fans, you know, it provides a lot of symbolism and metaphor and stuff like that for the way that we live our own lives. Because, you know, aren't we always just running around from one thing to another? You know, we're hurrying and, we are running literally from thing to thing and just, you know, trying to slow down and take our time and understand what's going on. And that's what Barry has to learn how to do too. It's just, he's on an entirely different level. And, I think it's something that the writers can do just to, you know, explain a little bit about what's happening here in the early 21st century.
And of course, what is important for, developing a superhero is that they've got to have their limitations. They got to have their weaknesses. And I think that's what we are, working through, in the first part of this season, and I guess, you know,
setting
it continues,
right?
But it sort of fine tunes later on once you've established everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, despite the fact that, this is a show about the Flash and, obviously Barry is the main character, I feel like this episode was, about a lot of other people as well. And so I want to break down the people that, work at Star Labs and also some other friends and relatives that Barry has.
Okay.
Starting with Caitlin, because I think she was a big focus in this episode.
Yeah, I think she probably was she might have been kind of the main focus if you want to say that, you know, Barry's always kind of the main focus, but she had at least equal time here.
But I agree, and because, you know, we have our suspicions, or more than suspicions, of where some of these characters are going, it makes a lot of sense for Caitlin to be facing this. But she has to eventually face what has happened to her fiancé. And this is the first time we actually saw her fiancé in the series. He wasn't in the pilot, was he? They never showed...
No, they just mentioned him. Yeah, this is the first time that Robbie Amell has shown up as Ronnie.
Right. So her fiancé, Ronnie, was at the particle accelerator that night. Wasn't even supposed to be, and had to go down and really end up saving a lot of people. But in the process, he... what should we say? Suffered some tragedy.
Yeah.
Disappear. I mean, we don't really know what happened to him. They didn't show that in this episode. But he was inside the particle accelerator when it breached.
Yeah.
Would you consider it an explosion? I guess it was an explosion.
It was. And he was the one that made sure that it vented up instead of radially out, so that, you know, basically saved everybody's life there on the campus, on the Star Labs campus. Because, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, or the one.
Or the one. Sorry.
You'll flood the whole compartment!
Sorry. okay, so anyway, she can outrun the fact that she has to go and face that.
Yeah.
She had to go into the particle accelerator. They were trying to figure out if there was a way to contain metahumans as they catch them, because, you know, they can't keep killing them. So she had to go down there. Now, have you ever had an experience where, you know, you just didn't want to face it because it was really painful to re-experience or to remember, and you just had to force yourself to do it?
Nope, I always walk right into those sort of things.
Oh, just good job.
Blindly.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I know that. I mean, but that is tough, and it takes a lot of courage to take that first step, because
it takes an emotional toll on the individual as well. And I can just imagine. I mean, I didn't feel I identified more with what Sisko was going through with his sort of facing of the demons more than Caitlin did. For some reason, she just felt kind of cold about the whole thing. You know, it's just that it was, and that's kind of what she is. She's very, her emotions are tampered, I think. And this was one of Ronnie's complaints to her. There were times when you see her smile, but she's really, this is not a fault of Danielle Panabaker, the actress. I think this is how she's chosen to play this character, that she's very, she doesn't have a lot of highs and lows. She's very even.
You're trying to avoid using the word cold, aren't you?
I'm trying. I am. I said it once there, but I don't want to keep using it. But I mean, it is kind of true. I mean, there's just that. It's not indifference. It's just emotional space, I guess.
Yeah, I think she did. Yeah, she just doesn't wear her heart on her sleeve. You know, like some people, it's just kind of very. She's very scientific and very very dry. You know,
right.
At least it seems like it. Especially now.
And that, I don't think it's the case, but that might just be the guard that she's putting up because of the events that happened. We haven't really seen, I mean, she seemed very smiley and all that, you know, before the accident, at least in the couple scenes that we saw where she was standing behind Dr. Wells and a little bit when they're talking in the control room and stuff, but there's not been any flashbacks prior to the accident, so we really don't know what exactly she was like.
No, and we probably will learn that a little bit more. But I think she's going to start to become different than we've seen her, with that brooding kind of attitude. But things are going to happen that she'll have to change that. But so you mentioned Sisko. Now, you know, Caitlin is she just can't outrun the fact that she's going to have to go down to that particle accelerator and really just come to terms with Ronnie's death. But
right.
But Sisko was down there with him and was instructed by Ronnie to lock him in if he wasn't back in 2 minutes, which didn't seem like that much time. Like,
right. I mean, you gotta,
okay, like, stop explaining to him. You're wasting time. Give him like 4 minutes and then go. Stop talking to him.
Right.
So Sisko, I don't know that his guilt, that his issue that he has to face is quite as serious, because he knows he did the right thing, but it's still hard.
Well, he didn't just affect. So I look at it this way. Caitlin is suffering because her fiance is gone. But what Sisko did not just affect Ronnie, because he doesn't have to deal with Ronnie anymore. I mean, yes, it's a tragedy, but Ronnie's not there, but Caitlin is. And, you know, there's that saying that says that, you know, it's always harder for the survivors of tragedies, because they're the ones that have to move on with their lives. And so Sisko has to come to terms himself with what he did for Ronnie, or what he did to Ronnie, I guess, even though Ronnie, you know, told him that's what he needed to do, and he wouldn't let Caitlin in. But now he's also got to deal with Caitlin, who's there, and, like, you know, he wants to say something to her to just, I guess, I don't know, he never really got it out, but apologize or explain or whatever. And
did it strike you as if maybe Caitlin doesn't know exactly what happened down there, that it was Sisko locking him in?
He tells Sisko to lock him in, and then she comes down, and it's like Ronnie's in there. She's like, "We got to get him out." And he's like, "No, you know, we can't. It's too late." But that's true. I think maybe that's what he was trying to tell her, was that, you know, hey, I had to lock him in there, but, you know, that never got out. So, you know, that, I think that's going to drive a wedge further between them. And obviously it's some guilt that Sisko's having to live with. And I think that when Caitlin finds out about it, that there will be some sort of
okay. So I wondered if maybe he was just trying to say, hey, look, you know, I'm really sorry. I mean, I know what you're going through, but now, yeah, I kind of agree with you. I'm thinking maybe he was just going to tell her, oh, hey, yeah, by the way, yeah, I killed your fiance. Sorry about that.
He should send her a card.
Anyway, Sisko's a. They have a
sorry I killed your fiance
in a particle accelerator card.
Yeah, exactly.
you know where you can buy that? You can buy that at Dr. Manhattan's, I think, is where you can buy that. So
nice. Good
okay,
Watchmen
so,
reference there.
The Caitlin and Sisko are dealing with a similar thing. So let's go a little bit, you know, more lighthearted here. Iris and Eddie.
Those two. They're so silly.
Iris, this is not my favorite storyline from the show. It's okay. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't bother me, but it's not interesting me very much.
It's there's, you know, it's that. I don't want to use the word cheesy, because I mean there's a level of cheese, I think, to a lot of stuff going on in the show. It's I don't know. It's just not very engaging.
It's very realistic. I mean, I can see it all happening, but I don't know.
They're not hiding it well, obviously.
No,
as we find
not.
Out.
I think if, and I'm not saying I wish this had happened, because I don't really care. It's fine. But I think if the show had been on a while and we had got to know the two characters a little more, we knew Eddie's relationship with Joe a little bit more, and then they came, you know, they started making that connection, I might care more about Joe not knowing, but it, you know, it's not that big a deal to me. It really, it's just a way for Barry to show his feelings and not feel like he's getting what he wants there as well. So
yeah, it's a character moment thing, right? Because it sets up the blocks and creates a love triangle and
mm-hmm.
has something yep. for the hero to have to overcome to get the woman that he loves, but then he's gonna. Then when she's free and it's his turn to go for her, he's going to realize he's not really in love with her and he does like her as a sister, but then she's going to be interested, but he'll be involved with somebody else.
Honestly, and again, this isn't a criticism because I like the other things they're doing on the show, but I was getting more interest from the, you know, the sort of love connection between Barry and Tina McGee in the old 90s Flash episode. You know, that was more interesting to me, whether they were going to hook up or not.
Hmm. So, okay.
I don't know. That's
cool if you like that. I mean, I just...
There were some parts of it. I liked it, but I liked it better than this.
Okay. I can buy that. I mean, there were parts of that I thought were hokey, and there are parts of this that I think are hokey. But, I mean, we're only three episodes in, and Joe's found out. So, you know, how long is it going to take her to figure out that Barry's the Flash? I mean, you know, it's secrets don't get kept too long on the show so far, like, given what we've seen here.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. It's
we'll see how it
people are figuring
develops.
Out who he is pretty darn fast, but yeah. Okay. So they have to they can't outrun Joe West. I mean, they're going to have to tell him eventually. Eddie knows it. Matter of fact, it starts to be a little point of contention there. I thought that might be what broke him up for a while, but no, they just went ahead and told Joe while he was in the hospital, you know, so he couldn't shoot anybody.
Yeah.
Which was a cute scene. It was a cute scene, and again, I'm really liking Joe. I think that it's not, you know how sometimes in TV shows you get the cops that are extra copy.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
and they got that sort of cop attitude. But Joe seems a little bit more realistic to me. I think, you know, Jesse L. Martin is playing it in a way that you would probably see in just a real human being that we would deal with every day. He could have gotten really mad and cut her off from the family, you know, or he could have been extra supportive, but he didn't. He reacted, I think, in a way that Joe West would.
Yeah, he plays Joe West with a lot of warmth. It feels like he's really a father. He's a father to Iris, and he's a father to Barry. And, you know, as a father yourself, you probably can identify with this. You know, it's like your kids, they do some crazy, stupid things. But at the end of the day, it's like, all right, you know, I'm going to tease you about this. I'm going to rib you. I'm going to tell you you're grounded, or I'm going to support you. But, you know, I love you regardless.
That's right.
So
that's what he does, too. And, he does that with Barry, too.
Right.
Which I think great. It makes him a good father figure. And Henry even implies that. I mean, he says when Joe is meeting with Henry to tell him that, you know, he's got some more evidence now. Henry knows that Joe's been a good father to Barry. So I don't know. I don't know that I really saw Joe running from anything. Did you? It seemed like he was kind of the stability in this episode.
Yeah. I mean, and that's he does seem to be that in a number of the episodes here so far. He's sort of the constant character that, you know, people gravitate to. It's like, hey, I need a reality check, and Joe provides that because he doesn't have superpowers. He's not involved in the whole superhero thing. He knows Barry's secret, so. You know, Barry can come to him and say, hey, you know, I was really thinking about busting my dad out of prison. He's like, that is not a good idea. So, you know, he's that
right.
That conscience check, I guess. I'm also going to start calling the prison the crying prison, because it seems like every time we go there, we're just going to have people crying, like on TV and at home, and very emotional scenes, by the way.
It wasn't emotional. There was a bit of crying here at my house during that scene. I'm not going to lie.
I was just cutting onions.
The ladies of the house are enjoying this show. So, you know, those. But anyway, enough about me crying. all right. Real quick, one more thing about outrunning things. See, at the beginning, Barry also said that sometimes you have to run two things.
Yeah.
So what do you think he's running towards?
I think he's running towards freeing his dad. I mean, I think that's his goal. It's always been his goal, and now it's kind of like we discussed at the beginning here. It's kind of within his reach. He could just go out and free his dad right now, but he knows that's not the way to do it. But Joe believes him now, so he's got that backing, which I think you know, raises his spirits and makes him feel like, oh, it's within my grasp to be able to do that.
Yeah. Okay. I can see that. He's I think he's also running towards being a better hero, somebody that can succeed more often, or at least, you know, whenever possible. Mm-hmm. I think he wants to be a good person, and I think he kind of runs toward that too. Literally running towards that,
right.
So that's more of a literal.
And he does that. Yeah, he does that this episode. I mean, he had some problems last week with Danton Black, Multiplex, and so he's kind of overcome those issues. He has some slightly different issues in this episode, but he seems to, you know, move through those, and you know, at this point, you know, I think he's gonna get to a point in a couple episodes where he's gonna feel like he's really mastered his powers. But then, of course, I believe from a story arc or a character development standpoint, he's gonna get, you know, he's gonna come up against an insurmountable foe or foes or something like that, and then realize that he really has a long way to go. But you know, that's
let's
part
hope
of
so.
The hero's process or the hero journey for him.
The hero's
and stuff.
Journey, yeah, that's right. That's important. You've got to continue to face things that are challenging. So, well, all right. So speaking of challenging, I want to just briefly talk about the villain in this episode, the Mist,
mm-hmm.
also known as Kyle Nimbus.
All very clever.
Yeah, his middle name is Cumulo, I think. But now the reason I said I just want to briefly touch on the Mist was because I don't feel like this was entirely a villain episode. I think that the Mist and even, you know, to a point, Barry kind of took a back seat to the plot and character development of all those other people we were just talking about. He wasn't even really in the majority of the episode. But the Mist was. He is a Flash villain from the comics, and he's also a villain of Starman.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Bridges?
No, not that Starman.
Oh, okay.
The DC Comics Starman.
Oh, the superhero Starman. Yeah. Gotcha.
Dutch apple pie, delicious. so he has his, you know, origins in the comic book, and actually he was from, I think, World War One. He was even a villain of Jay Garrick, Golden Age Flash. So he's been around for a really long time.
It probably would have been World War II.
Okay.
The 30s, right? Because World War One is the teens, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Some of the
information that I found said dated back to World War One, but maybe that was just
some
of his origins.
Yes. Yeah, within the story of that. Right, because I don't think comics were being published back then. But anyway.
No, yeah, I agree. I apologize. So in the DC universe in World War One. So,
yes.
So yeah, you know, he was an okay a villain. The idea of turning into Mist, man, that was like a gigantic leap of faith this early in the series. But I guess so is cloning yourself instantly. So
yeah.
I think that's where they're going to go, man. They're just going all out with comic book powers.
I enjoyed their explanation for it. So. It's here's a guy that can control poison gas. Oh, no, wait a second. He actually becomes poison gas. Well, why is that? And, you know, given the fact that he was struck by the particle accelerator explosion beam, whatever it was, shockwave. He was a criminal that was being put to death in the gas chamber at the same moment that the particle accelerator shockwave hit him. So the chemicals that were in him that were killing him, he's now gained the ability to turn into that toxin. Very clever. I don't think that's exactly how it works in the comics, but I think that's a really interesting explanation for the way they do stuff here on the show.
Yeah, and I like that they do kind of explain it because they've so far found some really interesting ways to explain it. So you know, it kind of cool. I like the way he stopped him, you know, you saw the preview for this week, and he was breathing it in, and I was wondering how his speed was going to get him out of that, but it was actually his metabolism that saved him from that, and that was a nice, scary little scene where they jabbed the needle into his lungs.
Yeah, this is going to hurt a little bit, or what you say, this is not going to hurt a lot, and Cisco's like, oh yeah, it's going to hurt a bunch. So I thought the effects that they used with him, where you could kind of see the Mist grow, like especially in that kind of final fight. You know, they gave the Mist human proportions for parts of him. Like you could see his face and or his hands at different times.
Yeah.
I also wondered
as he was
if the
chasing
actor,
Barry.
I'm sorry?
As he was chasing Barry.
Yeah, when he was chasing Barry, right. I also was wondering if the actor that played the Mist had played on Fringe as one of the observers, but he had not. I looked him up.
No.
Yeah, I don't know if you're familiar with Fringe, but they're these bald dudes that look, you know, have no eyebrows, no hair, or anything like that, and that this guy was just freaky enough that I was like, oh, he looks like one of those observers from Fringe, but nope, hadn't played one.
No, okay. Well, he played a pretty good freaky, misty guy here. And, again, another story development in this is that they didn't kill this villain. And that, I think, you know, that's obviously going to be a very important, well, it's probably going to be cause some very important problems down the road when they start
right.
collecting all these villains, especially if they get out.
You got to catch them all. So this is a very important episode, though, because this is the episode where they decide, okay, well, if we're going to be stopping these villains, we've got to have some place to put them. Hey, what do you know? We've got the this whole space kind of right below our feet, which is it's a good thing and it's a curse at the same time. It's like you know that it's like what could go wrong? So
I know somebody that knows what could go wrong, I'm sure. But
we'll see, yeah.
But it was a good idea, and I like that they're already addressing not killing the villains. You can't. You can't kill them every week. First of all, that's not really ethical to be a hero and, you know, keep executing your villains. But you're going to run out of really cool characters, and I don't want to. I'm not sure that I would consider you know, Kyle Nimbus to be a really cool character, but I suppose you could become more developed, but it's got that potential of keep collecting, like you said, keep collecting them all.
Yeah.
He's going to start having to run around with like a little red and white ball and just, you know, put him in there to take him back to the particle accelerator. But
Pika, Pika!
So I like the way they used this episode with it was still kind of a villain of the week, which I want them to start getting away from, but it wasn't so in your face because they had other things they wanted to talk about.
It was a villain of the week in the sense that there was a new villain this week, but I really think the focus was on Caitlin, like I was saying earlier.
Right.
She and her storyline, her grieving, her you know, loss and stuff like that kind of took center stage.
It did. And some of the others, too, which gave them good background, but especially Caitlin. And we didn't really get a whole lot of information on the other employee of Star Labs, Harrison Wells.
Mm-hmm.
So, man, what we did get is another end-of-the-episode insight.
Oh,
as
man.
The fact that he is not what he seems. I think we get that. We don't need to have that every episode. But
well, that reveal, I felt like it was kind of confirming. I wanted a little bit more than that because it really seemed to be the same sort of thing that we got last week.
Mm-hmm.
Because Joe was talking to Harrison. I believe they were in the lobby of the police station. And he kind of confronts him when Harrison finds out that Joe knows that Barry's the Flash as well. And Joe says, did you know what was going on with Barry, you know, when you came to the hospital? And Harrison Wells just, he has this weird kind of grin, smile. He's like, well, you know, it's just, And he never really answers it, but you're like, oh, yeah, he totally knew what was going on with Barry there at the hospital. And of course here we see that he absolutely knows what's going on. And in fact, he's got some kind of video feed. It must be, you know what? I just realized what it is. He was watching that episode of The Arrow, from last season where Barry got struck by lightning. He was just catching a rerun.
So it wasn't even like a camera in Barry's lab or anything. It was just, he was watching the CW.
Yeah. He was just watching
just
the CW
up.
There. So,
Was he binge watching, like yeah. While he was working on the power particle accelerator? He just pulled
he
out
grabbed
season
a Mai
two.
Tai.
Yeah, I mean, that did give a little insight. I thought about that, too. But we aren't really getting much information on who is Harrison Wells.
He could be a lot of different people.
Yes, he could.
I believe at this point, I think I could unequivocally say that he is a time traveler of some magnitude.
I think I'll go ahead and get on that boat with you.
Okay.
Did you have a clue for that specifically? I mean, it's, you know, he's obviously knows things from the future, but anything specifically about him being a time traveler?
There's not a lot that comes directly from the episodes. I feel this may be a cheat, but there's just so much about the Flash mythology that has to do with time travel. But there is a very curious line that he mentions where he says, I feel like I should say something important, like one small step for man, but I feel like I've been waiting for this day for centuries. Like, what? Wait, centuries? That's a weird way to put it.
Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing. I mean, and that it doesn't even, you know, really make sense unless you know there's some sort of strange context like we do. But who was he saying that to? Was he saying that to?
He was talking to the assembled Ronnie? People in the control room. So, Sisko and all the techs. But basically, Caitlin and Sisko.
Didn't anybody go? Yeah, wait.
What
does that mean?
Yeah,
but I guess it makes sense. But I don't. So what do you think? I don't know. You got some theories on who you think he is? I'm gonna guess that he's somebody from the comics universe. I think that probably somebody that important. I think they would probably pull, but we don't really know. I mean, he could be a brand new character.
He could be, and Harrison Wells could be an alias, right? You know, because if you're going to time travel, from the future, I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter for you to change your name unless your name is something that people would recognize in the time that you're going to. You know, like if someone was just traveling back, you know, a few years, but he uses this phrase, waiting for this, you know, for centuries. The main villain that the Flash confronts, Reverse Flash, a.k.a. Professor Zoom, is from the 30th century. So that's 9 centuries. That could count as centuries. He does not appear to look like what Zoom... Like, Zoom is usually a more muscular sort of character. And, you know, he's very thin. The one thing that occurred to me in this episode... And this is a way off the wall theory, and if they do something like this, I would be really surprised. So what do we know so far? We know that he's a character that has access to some sort of futuristic newspaper from at least, I think it was, what, 20 years in the future?
That sounds about right.
From the first episode. We also know that he is willing to kill people that would take advantage of the Flash because he feels he needs to protect him, his words. And in this episode, we know that he has the ability to see into Barry's lab and witness the moment of his creation and probably set up the particle accelerator to fail at that exact time or stop people from making it not fail. So that Barry could be created. So given all those things and some of the mannerisms of him in this episode, I was like, my gosh, could he be Barry from the future who has to come back to make sure that his genesis happens? Because there was a scene where Barry looked and his mannerisms echoed the way that Tom Cavanaugh acts.
Yeah, I had thought about that too. It just seems like, I don't know, I don't know that Barry would go to the extremes that we saw him go to in the second episode.
Yes, but we don't know what Barry would have to have gone through to get to the point to decide to come back to make sure that he...
True.
...was created, basically.
True. I guess I don't want to believe Barry would do something like that, so I'm thinking he's somebody else. Okay. Professor Zoom would make sense. That's kind of my leading theory, but we'll keep watching. We'll keep watching for clues. Apparently, they're going to give us one at the end of each episode, but we'll keep looking for it. But well, so I had one more thing I wanted to just ask you about.
Okay,
as far as recognizing Barry when he goes to the prison to save Joe, and his dad is there.
Yeah,
you know, he starts trying to save Joe with the serum,
the
I guess you'd call it.
Right. Yep.
And his dad's just looking at him, kind of staring at him. And so he disguises himself by vibrating his face, which was really pretty cool, actually.
Excellent. Yes.
Although I don't know how he could concentrate on Joe if he's nodding his head back and forth. But but I want to know, do you think Henry recognized Barry?
I thought that as well. It seems like there is a moment of recognition there.
When he's actually there as the Flash?
When he's there as the Flash, right.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, he recognizes him when he's there visiting later in the episode.
Yes, I know that.
Who are you?
The reason I said that is because at the end, when he comes to visit him as Barry and he's talking to his dad, Henry starts telling Barry this story about when he first started walking and then he started running and he was just running everywhere, he said. So I'm wondering, was that a little hint? Was he saying, you know, I gotcha. I see.
I can see where you think that, you know, where you could interpret it that way. Based on what we're talking about right now, that is a definite possibility. But at the time, I thought that was more of the thematic elements of the show. It was more of the writers talking about the thematic elements of the show and. I guess the fact that, you know, Barry opens the show talking about everybody's running to something or from something or to someone. And I felt that was just them revisiting the whole, you know, running theme.
Well, and that fits and that made sense to me. I that occurred to me. But I still think, I don't know, there may have been just a little bit of recognition on his part.
And it could be, you know, it'd be great. I'd love for him to go. You're the Flash. He's like, how'd you know that? And it's like, I was the Flash when I was a kid, too.
We'll have to get him like a little metal hat with some wings on it and give it to Henry. That would be cool. So, all right. Well, overall, very impressed with this episode on a different level. It wasn't as flashy, pun intended there, as the other two that we've seen. Uh-huh. But I like the direction that this one is sending us in.
I like where the show seems to be going and that it continues to be lighthearted enough. You've got Sisko naming the villain again, which seems like that's going to be a thing each week, which is fun. I mean, Sisko's that's the kind of guy he is. You know, I'm sure we all know people like that at our office or something like that that are always just doing goofy things. So,
yeah, I'm digging that character. He's pretty cool, and I that's a great way to get the villains' names in there because you know it's cheesy on realistic TV that they have these days to give these villains these goofy names. So I like
Multiplex
the
Mist. Yeah, those are weird.
I thought he was going to call him the fart at the beginning, but glad they didn't go with that.
He did. Yeah.
The other direction that I am liking is the feedback that we have been getting for Scarlet Velocity. We're getting quite a few posts and comments on our Facebook page. I'm really enjoying that. One of our listeners, Ted, he was asking about the headgear. For the Flash, and do we think that they have a different costume for Grant Gustin when they pull it back? Because it does look a little bit different when he's not actually wearing it on his head.
Yeah, when he pulls his mask off, it looks more like a hood on his around his neck. And I'm sure, actually, probably depending on the different types of scenes they do, they probably have a couple different types of costumes. Mm-hmm. You know, for maybe if he's sitting versus running, or having to be unzipped versus hood down, or something like that. So
yeah, well, and the big thing, and I think Ted pointed this out too, but is where does that little chin piece go to when he's got it pulled back? Because you never see that. I'm gonna have to keep my eye out for it next time he has his hood pulled down.
That is a good point. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't either. That chin piece has never been my favorite. I'm not a big fan of the chin piece.
It's like on Arrow when he takes his mask off and all of a sudden the black makeup around his eyes goes away. You know, it's just – you just got to go with it.
He just buys that cheap stuff at Walgreens, you know.
Yeah.
So – and then, you know, another listener, Sarah, she was wondering if what did we think, you and I, did we think which show had more heart, Arrow or The Flash? Boy, and I don't know how to answer that.
I don't think we have – and I think I might have posted this on the Facebook page in response to the question. I don't think we have enough episodes of The Flash to really tell us at this point. I mean, it's kind of unfair, right? We've got two seasons plus a little bit versus three episodes. So give us maybe you want to say like the winter break? We can
That's good. Winter break. We'll
that's
try
a good
to think
chunk.
About
that's probably
there.
Half.
So, and maybe they could merge some of the characters – And we could compare them a little bit more closely. Maybe they could be on each other's show or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if they had like a crossover or something.
Right.
That'd be cool. That'd be an easy way to compare their characters because they'd both be right there.
There you go.
Very neat.
Excellent. All right. Well, again, there's tons of references. We're going to have to go through this list pretty quick to get through them. But why don't you share some of the references that we caught in this one?
Oh, my gosh. I was just sitting there. I felt like I was typing the entire episode because there were just so many references. The movie theater at the beginning that we craned down from, the Vogue Theater there in Central City, was showing two films, Blue Devil 2 and The Rita Farr Story. And so Blue Devil and Rita Farr are both two Hollywood-based superheroes from the DC Comics. Blue Devil was a stuntman that was dressed up in a Blue Devil costume for his role, and when an accident happened and he was fused with it and actually gets superpowers. Rita Farr was a famous Hollywood starlet until she went and shot a film near a dangerous volcano, got some weird sort of gas or something like that, and she became a character called Elastigirl and was a member of the Doom Patrol. And Blue Devil has actually been, since this was Blue Devil 2, right? Blue Devil 1, Blue Devil, the original film, was an ad that appeared in Arrow last season on a bus in the episode Time of Death. So
must have been a popular movie.
It's going to be a great series. I'm sure there's going to be Blue Devil 3, Blue Devil 4 showing up.
This also tells me that I am not doing enough interesting things in my life, because if any particle accelerator accident or nuclear explosion ever happened, my superpowers would really pretty much consist of sitting powerfully in front of the computer or something. So
yeah.
I need to get out there more.
You'd be like Chalk Man. You'll have all this. You can write on any surface, but it looks like chalk.
Oh, that's horrible. Yeah. I need to start wearing more interesting clothes.
Well, hey, whenever I see a spider, I always try to let them bite me just in case they're radioactive.
How's that working so far?
I've gotten a couple abscesses, and I think I'm allergic now, but, you know, it's okay. Also in this episode, Wade Boulevard was referenced. That is named after the comic book writer Mark Wade, who had done a lot of Marvel and DC comics. He's done too many to list here. Barry mentions at one point that he's not looking for, quote, a museum to be built in his name. And so in the comic books, the Flash Museum is actually a very famous museum in the future, which is one of the things that inspires Professor Zoom to come back in time to visit the Flash.
And, you know, that shows, again, how important the superhero Flash is, because you don't hear about any other superheroes having museums in the future, not even Superman.
Superman's kind of got his own museum at the Fortress of Solitude, but yeah that's
nobody
true.
Goes to visit.
The Flash is a very he seems to be a very important character in the DC universe, like, you know, through different stages of time and everything mm-hmm. like that we see, because he's very popular. I think both within the universe and in our world as well. The writers continue to really pile on the references to 52. The jury that convicted Henry Allen took 52 minutes to come back with a verdict. Also, reactor area 52 in the particle accelerator there.
Yeah, that's where they're going to be keeping the villains, I think, right?
Yep. Yep, that's their new jail area, I guess. Caitlin and Ronnie are mentioned being like fire and ice, which is very funny because, of course, in the comic books, Caitlin is a character called Killer Frost and Ronnie is a character called Firestorm, fire and ice. You mentioned Barry vibrating really fast to avoid being identified, which is something he does in the comics. I don't know that they really draw him vibrating fast, but when people say, hey, how come you didn't get your picture taken? It's like, well, because I vibrated really fast. Also, this is really interesting. The Firestorm logo, again, that's Ronnie's, that's the character Ronnie Raymond, is hidden in the part, well, not really even hidden, but it is in the particle accelerator door. I have posted the picture to our episode screen caps album on Facebook, so go check that out. I knew something looked weird about that door.
With the actual logo.
Yeah, it would be funny if it actually said Firestorm across it. But it's the graphic representation of the Firestorm's emblem on his chest. How about that? Is that
yes? Yes, that with good? A little bit subtler colors.
Yes. Yeah. It's more muted, more realistic. Yeah.
Need? They need Chalk Man to go in there and brighten it up.
Oh, hey, that'd be nice.
I'll try to work on that.
So let's see. Big Belly Burger was mentioned. That's a famous restaurant in the DC universe, and it's shown up in Arrow numbers of times.
I liked the line that Harrison Wells said. What? I eat?
Yeah. What's the you wrote this one about the Orloff case. I don't remember that one.
I think that was something from the was that at the police station they were talking about that? Now I can't remember where I saw it in the episode.
Oh, yeah, it was it was Commissioner no, not Captain Singh coming in asking for fiber samples.
Right. Right.
On the Orloff case.
Right, right. So Orloff, Professor Peter Orloff, is a Soviet biogeneticist. He created Red Trinity, who is, if you read the Flash comics, you'll know they're like these Soviet Flash counterparts, I guess.
Okay.
Genetically enhanced fast people.
In Russia, Flash run you. No, that doesn't work. So, and then I want to do an entire episode just in my bad Russian accent.
This could really potentially work. Either
do we have
on Arrow
a Halloween episode
Flash,
coming up?
Actually,
have to see if we do. And then in what I think we can agree is a nod to the 1990s Flash when Barry takes off at one point, Caitlin's hair goes. And gets blown up very much like the way Tina McGee's hair was always being blown in the 1990s.
In every single episode.
Oh, is that how we... Okay, so we know he's running fast because there's someone off screen with a air gun just...
I'm guessing that Amanda Pays, who played Tina McGee, I bet you to this day she still has like a post-traumatic stress disorder whenever she sees a leaf blower.
Yeah. That's great.
So I liked that, though. That made me think of watching the 90s Flash series this summer, and I thought it was a good – and whether they did it on purpose or not, to me, it was a good reference.
It's something else that, you know, lightens up the mood a little bit. I mean, you know, you've got – and it's a great way to just show and interact. You know, it's a physical effect that you don't have to do digitally that can, you know, show – the character, you know, how fast this character is, like, because he's not even really in the shot. It's like he's in the previous shot, and then they do a cut, an edit, and to another character having their hair blown.
Right, and
it's very low budget, but
it is, but that's okay. And I didn't include this in the references either. But I also kind of thought of the '90s series when the captain came up to Barry's lab, and he had just run all around, so the papers were flying, and the captain.
Oh, right.
Do you know what I'm going to say? The captain came in. He's like, clean up your lab. But it made me think of it made me think of the captain from the 90s series. Captain, wasn't his name Captain Garfield? Was that it?
Or Garfield, no? Yep.
Yeah, Captain Garfield. Or Lieutenant Garfield, I guess.
Or Lieutenant Garfield, yes, exactly.
But he used to do stuff like that all the time.
Because Burry's lab was always a mess because he always had dishes or pizza boxes or donuts or whatever around.
I gotta eat. So anyway, that was a good nod too. But well, even though this wasn't a villain driven episode, there was a lot to talk about and a lot to look forward to. You know what? But for now, Jay and I, we got to run.
Well, if you enjoyed this episode, though, please be sure to leave us feedback on iTunes. We do read it all. We enjoy it, whether it's positive or negative. We do prefer the positive, however. You can also contact us by email at scarletvelocity@randomchatter.com or on Twitter at scarletvelocity. Or visit our Facebook page. We've got a lot of cool stuff going on there. We're posting photos or other little tidbits throughout the week when we're not recording one of our podcasts here. And that's at facebook.com/Scarlet Velocity Podcast.
You can also check out our other podcast that we do, Green Justice, which is an Arrow podcast, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. And those are both on randomchatter.com. And all of our shows are available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And, of course, if you enjoyed this podcast, please, please be sure to tell all your friends about this podcast and the show, The Flash. And remember, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for The Flash can be found at www.cwtv.com. The Flash and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.